We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
What's up, Dynasty Command Center Nation? This is Curtis Patrick. It's the Dynasty Commander. I'm here to tell you about Bet Online. They're our great friends and exclusive business partner. You got to take advantage of the best online betting bonus in the business. Check out betonline.ag, sign up for a free account, and make sure to use our promo code. It's BlueWire, all one word, BlueWire. You're going to get a 50% sign up bonus. I know the sports world's kind of coming to a pause right now, but I've got good news. UFC Commissioner Dana White recently shared that UFC is going to continue with their schedule. He consulted with President Trump and Vice President Pence. They had some of these conversations, different scenario planning. They're going to continue with their season. They're like the only major sport that's doing that right now. So I think there's going to be more UFC and MMA money in play than ever in the sports betting world, because what else are you going to bet on? So sign up for Bet Online today. It's betonline.ag, promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, and grab that bonus. Okay, this is Curtis Patrick. We're jumping into episode 46. Of the Dynasty Command Center podcast, best dynasty podcast in the business. Travis May is here with me today. We're going to talk about some controversial rookies. Travis, who do you want to get into first today?
Definitely want to. I think one of the most controversial players has to be Henry Ruggs, right? I mean, there's people that want to get all upset about his, you know, just the hype around him getting draft capital at all versus him having, you know, the basically the third best season on Alabama. Out of all the wide receivers there this year, and his production profile never breaking out or whatever. You know, there's different narratives surrounding Ruggs and what, where he should go in rookie drafts, what his profile looks like. Will he hit at all? Is there any precedent for him? So I definitely wanted to just get your take really, really fast. I actually did a piece this spring already on him. Where are you with Henry Ruggs?
So Henry Ruggs, I think what's going to happen is everyone's going to be right about him. So
everybody.
Yes. And here's the way that will happen. So, you know, draft Twitter and, you know, NFL scouts seem to love Ruggs, seem to love his speed, seem to love what he can add to NFL offenses. That's what's going to drive his NFL draft capital into probably the mid to late first round at the NFL draft. And it's because of his ability to take the top off of the defense and open up everything underneath. And I think he's gonna be able to do that. His speed alone will enable him to do that. But we also don't really have examples of players with his profile becoming volume players in the NFL. And volume players are what we want in fantasy. They're what we want in dynasty. And so I think he can hit in terms of being valuable to an NFL offense. But I think all the people who are, you know, kind of waving the caution flag on Henry Ruggs, including myself and you, for fantasy and dynasty purposes, are also probably correct. You know, why would we draft Henry Ruggs among the elite wide receivers if he reasonably projects to an 85 to 90 target role with a low completion percentage because of the difficulty of the targets he's going to get? That doesn't make any sense to me. I think he's going to be overdrafted by the community at large. I think he belongs in the early to potentially even mid second round of dynasty drafts. As a result of that, that's where I've got him ranked, kind of in that 12 to 15 range, 12 to 18 range, potentially, depending on team need and league dynamic. So that's really where I'm at. You know, I would love for you to maybe state to the listeners what you've got on him in terms of his adjusted production and index context. Sure. Cause I think it's really the biggest caution flag that we can wave for everyone. Yeah. Is that stat.
Yeah, absolutely. So the adjusted production index takes a look at a player's, dominator rating, their yards per team pass attempt, and touchdowns per team pass attempt, and kind of lumps those together into a collective model. And then when you really mix that in with draft capital, you can really begin to understand where a player's success rate might go. He's about the 30th percentile, though, which is in the really dangerous range of it not making any sense that he's going to hit at the next level. Yes, there have been exceptions to that. There was, you know, a couple last year that found some success in the right spot and didn't have perfect adjusted production index profiles. But Henry Ruggs really does not check any of the boxes that you want to see. I mean, you know, really capping out at like, you know, a 20% dominator and not even having like a 40th percentile on yards per team pass attempt numbers. And we found recent research has really found that yards per team pass attempt is stickier than dominator even. And so for him to really be below average just across the board, it's kind of discouraging.
I want to make sure that the listeners don't lose that point. I want you to say what you just said about adjusted yards per team pass attempt again.
Yeah. So, I mean, that there's been evidence that shows that that has actually been more meaningful in predicting future NFL production than dominator by itself. So there probably needs to be more work done on that. I think at this point, everyone has talked about and over talked about the importance of dominator, but there hasn't been enough people that really have tackled just yards per team pass attempt and how that translates. But if a player like him who has some crazy yards per target numbers and efficiency or whatever you want to, there's different narratives surrounding him. If a player like him still can't have good adjusted yards per team pass attempt numbers in college on his own team, it's really hard to predict that he's going to have success at the next level. Just looking at the math. So I'm not trying to say that he can't run routes. I'm not trying to say that he doesn't have elite speed. It's just, I'm not sure that the volume role, like you said, that would be sustainable at the next level to be a high caliber fantasy starter is there, and that's okay. He can be a role player for you. He can be a boom bust best ball weapon, but I'm just not sure that we're going to get a really trustworthy asset. So for me, he is in that 12 to 15 range as well. I think most leagues he's going to sneak into the first round of rookie drafts in terms of one QB leagues, but definitely a player that has some holes in the profile and is going to continue to be pretty controversial as we approach the draft.
Yeah, that's all super on point. Adjusted production index, obviously one of the main things that we like to look at RotoViz now that we come to appreciate how it can be applied and how meaningful it's been in a prospect eval. But I want to take it a step farther. I mean, really looking into Ruggs' profile. Now I'm using the RotoViz Prospect Box Score Scout.
Sure.
The RotoViz Prospect Box Score Scout includes different elements of production, and it also now has all the combine info that's on record for these guys. We can actually adjust for draft pick here too. So I'm gonna even give us the best case scenario for Henry Ruggs here. I'm gonna give him assign him a draft pick of 15. That's about as high as I've seen anyone mock him among the major NFL mock drafters. 15 would be a best case scenario for Henry Ruggs. And his comp list, his sim list is just littered with all the worst draft picks ever in fantasy or dynasty. I mean, Henry Ruggs' profile, when you look at his peer group, he looks like an absolute flop. I need people to understand this and look at their rankings and ask themselves, do I have Henry Ruggs ranked too high? I'm going to just run down this list. I mean, it's bad, Travis. It's bad. So Curtis Samuels is number one comp, followed by Paris Campbell, Philip Dorsett, Dante Pettis, John Ross, Justin Hunter, Tavon Austin, Marquise Goodwin, Nelson Agholor.
Mm.
Those are his top those are his top comps. Those are the top nine. I went nine deep. I was looking for anything for you guys. I went nine deep.
Samuel
there's nothing. There's nothing there. Okay, we've seen flashes from Curtis Samuel. I'm not throwing in the towel there. I'm not even throwing in the towel on John Ross because he looked great before the injury derailed him at the beginning of last season. But even if we give both of those guys hits, we got two out of nine who are like what? Like low-level hits, low-level success stories. Henry Ruggs is a screaming fade in the first round of your dynasty rookie drafts. I mean, that is the takeaway that I need people to understand. Like, it doesn't mean that you think he's a bad player. Doesn't mean that you think that he doesn't have some talent or that he will be valuable to an NFL offense. It doesn't even mean that he's not deserving of a first-round draft pick if he's really going to change the complexity of an NFL offense. But what it means is there are no examples since the year 2000 of a player with this type of profile becoming valuable in Dynasty. That's all there is to say about Henry Ruggs. I can't state it any stronger.
Yeah, that's pretty simple. I mean, that's pretty black and white. So,
all right, let's talk about somebody that matters. Let's talk about somebody that matters for Dynasty Leaguers.
Ouch. Oh, my gosh. All right, well, I guess the guy that matters and has definitely mattered to many since the Combine, Denzel Mims. We kind of talked about him a little bit right after the Combine, but man, the hype train has been rolling for the past few weeks. People just talking about him as potentially now being a first-round NFL draft pick in that conversation now, given his elite performance at the Combine. And I'd love to take a similar look at his production profile, just looking at the box score scout, just to see what his sims are. I haven't looked as closely at his sims as I have some of the other top-end, you know, well, wide receivers in this class. I did put together his adjusted production index and have been keeping that together with a bunch of other wide receivers for my Devy work. But I'd be interested to see what his most common or best comps are right now. If we let's just say, I don't know, let's just ideally, you know, maybe he sneaks into the back of round one. What happens if we give him a draft pick of pick 30 or something like that?
Okay, I'm going to do it. Let's just do it live on the air. We did not prep for this.
No.
This is going to be raw. Pick 30 is probably going to give us a pretty mixed bag here. And then we'll come back and let's take a look at his API. We'll do it in the reverse order that we did for Henry Ruggs. So if I give pick 30, and I'm going to exclude non-Power 5 conference players. That's something you can toggle on and off in the RotoViz Prospect Box Score Scout. So basically what we're doing is we're adjusting for level of competition. We're not going to include any players in this evaluation who weren't playing against Power 5 defenses for the majority of their games. So here we go. Denzel Mims, top comps in the Prospect Box Score Scout with a draft pick of 30 next month. Leonard Hankerson, Brian Robiski, Devin Smith. And we get Debo Samuel. That's great. Devere Posey, Michael Floyd. Michael Floyd was a great prospect. Yeah, Michael Floyd flopped in the NFL. You can argue that some of that was situational. You can argue that some of that maybe was drive or mental makeup. Michael Floyd was a great prospect. There's a reason he was a post type sleeper for people for year after year after year. Kendall Wright, Torrey Smith, Christian Kirk, Sterling Shepard, James Washington, Justin Hunter, Chris Godwin. So we've got some players in here with a little bit of upside in stark contrast to Henry Ruggs. Still not a great group, but we've got about a 30% hit rate there. Yeah. If we want to call Chris Godwin, obviously the smash hit. I feel comfortable calling Debo Samuel a hit. You know, we almost had 200 PPR as a rookie. And then we've got, you know, out of the Christian Kirk, Sterling Shepard, James Washington cohort, I think at least one of those other guys has a future as a top 24 wide receiver. So I feel comfortable saying we've got about a 30% hit rate on Mims' profile per the box score scout. What do you got on API?
So he's got about a 70th percentile adjusted production index.
70th percentile?
Yes.
70th about. Percentile, that is your threshold, correct?
Well, I really want to see 60th percentile. Once you get below that, it's kind of a mess, especially if you get below 30th percentile. It's just, you might as well not even look at it. But yeah, 70th percentile is solid. So he is definitely in the range where if you get, you know, basically day one, day two draft capital, especially like top 50 draft capital, we're looking at a pretty good situation. So if he sneaks into the top 50 somehow, that's looking pretty good. But I mean, even one name I didn't hear you say was actually Kenny Britt. I know he actually kind of hit back in the day, but he's actually almost spot on in terms of his percentile of adjusted production index. And if you look at like last year's class, the guys that got some capital in the same range, you're looking at AJ Brown, and N'Keal Harry, and Marquise Hollywood Brown.
Okay.
So looking at a bunch of players that had decent profiles.
So we haven't given up on Hollywood or N'Keal Harry, but if you want to look at it, you know, that's basically a trio of players that we got a little bit of everything from. Yeah. AJ Brown was a mega hit. Hollywood was great when healthy. Did pop, just didn't get the volume consistently all year. Yeah. And then obviously N'Keal Harry was basically a worst case scenario.
Injury and all that.
Yeah. And so Denzel Mims, I think, you know, the way to look at it, this is a player certainly who we can see upside in this profile that we don't see with Henry Ruggs. There are some clear hits in his Sims. However, there's a wide range of outcomes. You know, absolutely, we definitely have some misses. And so that's why, as much as Denzel Mims is flying up the board, as much as we like the athleticism, you cannot put Denzel Mims up in that CeeDee Lamb, Jalen Reagor, Jerry Jeudy type range. He's a step below. I don't think you can even put him above Justin Jefferson at this point. But he's at that next level below there, where we've got the upside, but we still see, you know, a very clear path for misses as well.
Yep, absolutely. But I'm not saying don't get excited. I'm just saying don't put Denzel Mims as your wide receiver one in this class because he had a good combine and you just started watching him for the first time. So there's a lot to get excited about with him, but he's just not necessarily in that top tier for sure. But you kind of want to pivot over to some running backs and kind of look at least one guy there.
Yeah, we've got to spend more time talking about A.J. Dillon. Travis, we hit on him in our Combine All-Stars episode last week. Just kind of mentioned him in passing, talked about some of the similarities in his athleticism profile to Derrick Henry. Basically, I think I said something along the lines of, athletically, A.J. Dillon is a more compact, burstier version of Derrick Henry. And that got us excited. Now we're going to look a little bit more at his receiving profile, and I want to make some statements as to why AJ Dillon is still a target, like in a PPR setting, and not just in a standard setting. Sure. So let's hit the prospect box score scout again. Why don't you give me? Do we think AJ Dillon's a day two lock at this point, like a third round lock, or are we still not sure?
Man, it's kind of hard because I think leading up to it, a lot of the real draft analysts that were writing things up didn't have him in that conversation. He was mostly, you know, fifth round, sixth round, maybe early fourth round or something like that. It was not looking promising. And for me, that was kind of why I was a little bit hesitant to crown him king and put him in the first round conversation automatically, just because if he misses on capital, then you know, there's some concerns about him earning an early role. But it looks now, you know, when you basically just have a ridiculous size speed score and answer a lot of questions about your athleticism at the combine that anyone could have. I think he's probably going to be one that really sneaks into the back end of day two. So I'm confident in that now. So if we want to project him as a top 100 pick, I think his profile is a lot better. So yeah, I'm basically counting on it. With ranking now, I'm counting him as a day two pick.
Okay, so if we're going to do that, let's put him at the very end of day two, just to be as conservative as we can. So How's like pick 100 sound?
Yeah, that will basically sneak him in by just a few picks, probably. So,
okay, so it's like a trade up into the back of the third. Somebody coming up to get AJ Dillon here, which would really be exciting if they traded up to get him. So let's hit his top 11 again. I'm gonna actually do this first, excluding non-power five conference players, but then we're gonna bring them back in and see if we get any extra names. I really love this toggle on, toggle off functionality. Mike Beers did this for me when we kind of retooled this this app last spring, and it's really powerful. So AJ Dillon's closest sims using a draft pick 100, adjusting for his athleticism, adjusting for things like career rushing yards per game, career receptions per game, final season rushing yards, and some other important metrics for running backs. Shawn Green is his closest comp, followed by Deontay Foreman, Samaje Perine. Then we get Derrick Henry. Then followed by a player in Jeremy Hill who's not as athletically impressive as AJ Dillon, but might be a good like middle of the road player comp if we're going to look at range of outcomes for AJ Dillon. A couple really nice seasons of fantasy utility where he had a great goal line role, but never really got the reception, the receiving game upside that we would have wanted to see. We've got Toby Gerhart, James Conner. James Conner would be a smash outcome for AJ Dillon. Royce Freeman, Andre Williams, and Benny Snell. Really interesting that Benny Snell shows up there, even though we don't have where was Benny Snell drafted? He was undrafted.
He was like fifth round.
Fifth round. Yeah, fifth round. I'm gonna have to update the tool here. We're missing a draft pick on Benny Snell. So let's uncheck the exclude non-power five conference players. See if we get any other names. I'm doing that right now. Okay. It brings in Bernard Pierce out of Temple. And that is the only other. Oh, and Brian Hill out of Wyoming. Yeah. Okay. So we did not adjust draft picks. So again, AJ Dillon, we see a couple smashes. Derrick Henry, probably the absolute dream outcome for AJ Dillon. We got a couple lower level hits that we'd be pumped about getting AJ Dillon in the late first to mid second of a dynasty rookie draft, and getting something that amounted to a Jeremy Hill or James Conner level season where he's a bona fide starter for 1 or 2 years. And yeah, then obviously we have some huge misses. Shawn Green was an RB2 that was usable for a couple seasons. Yeah. But then Deontay Foreman with the torn Achilles, it's hard to really actually judge what that was. Samaje Perine, however, would be a flop there, as would probably Royce Freeman at this point. So a little all over the board with Dillon. Any clear takeaways for you there?
For me, he's just not really like any of those players. He's kind of like one of those hard to gauge, just freak athletes that doesn't really make sense. Like he shouldn't be able to run that fast at that size. He shouldn't be able to have the balance that he does at that size. And really, he took over games in a big way in college. Obviously, he had zero receptions his first season in college, only had 21 catches in total. So it's kind of hard to project a huge PPR role. But if he is in a spot where he is the go-to guy, I'm confident that he can make those plays. And really, that's just not how Boston College asked him and asked really their running backs in general within the scale of their passing offense to running backs. That's just not what they did. So understanding that, I think, can go a long way when you understand the context of a college system. So some schools just don't utilize their running backs in that way. And that doesn't mean that they can't. just doesn't mean that they were asked to. So I'm not really worried about Dillon.
Sure thing. And even in looking at his sims, we didn't really find anyone other than James Conner that was able to earn a type of receiving role in the NFL. And I think that's really the way to look at it. We're looking at his top 10 comps. Only one of those guys ended up being used differently. James Conner was not used as a receiver in college either. His best season was 21 receptions. AJ Dillon's best season was 13 receptions. But Travis, I've talked about elsewhere, and you and I have talked about this too, just because a player doesn't do it in college doesn't mean he can't do it. And Melvin Gordon is a perfect example. Never used in that capacity at Wisconsin whatsoever. People basically thought that his receiving ability was a minus, let alone even just being neutral. And he turned into a fantastic outlet type receiving back in the NFL, not a difference making receiving back, but he became an outlet and, you know, he can rack up the receptions and maybe AJ Dillon does that. I mean, I don't know. So there would be a path to even hitting maybe even more than any of the backs that we saw on our list in the absolute like 100th percentile outcome for AJ Dillon. So
absolutely. And even the consensus 1.01 this year in Jonathan Taylor only had 16 receptions coming into his final season. So had he, you know, not actually put together the receptions from this past season, would we all just assume he was bad now? I don't think so. So I think we can't discount it completely.
Sure, sure. So, hey, before we hit a couple other players real quick, we got to talk to you about Untuckit. Untuckit is our sponsor for the episode today. Have you guys ever wondered why traditional button-ups look so long and baggy? It's because they're never meant to be worn that way. I mean, they're designed to be tucked in. But very few of us guys actually wear them that way when we're not at work, not at a formal event, just hanging with your bros or at home or running around town on the weekend. You're not tucking that thing in. So Untuckit shirts were specifically designed to be worn that way. Doesn't matter what shape or size you are, their shirts are going to be the perfect untucked length. There's more than 50 fit combinations. So Untuckit shirt's going to look great on you, whether you're tall, short, slim, or athletic. That's going to be me and you, Travis, I think.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Oh, absolutely. don't just take our word for it, though. Try Untuckit for yourself. Visit Untuckit.com. Use the code BLUEWIRE. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. You're going to get 20% off your first order. They're even going to give you free shipping and free returns on all orders in the U.S., That's untuckit.com, untuckit.com, and promo code BLUEWIRE for 20% off your first order.
Well, awesome. Well, hey, let's jump into Jalen Hurts, because I know you've been talking about him some lately. I've seen some more people coming around on Jalen Hurts here recently. I kind of want to just talk about him because he's going to be a controversial name throughout this process. So especially, you know, he's the player that everyone's seen because he's played on Alabama and he's played on Oklahoma, and everybody's got an opinion on what they think about Jalen Hurts. And, oh, he can't throw. Oh, you know, he's not even that fast. You know, he's not Lamar Jackson. He can't do this. He can't do that. But, I mean, what happens if he starts on an NFL team? I mean,
That's what we got to talk about. We got to talk about the hits for these quarterbacks. And if all the quarterbacks hit, Jalen Hurts is the QB1 in the class, if they all hit. Because nobody gives you the combination of adequate passing ability and otherworldly Konami code production. Nobody gives you what Jalen Hurts can give you. And you know, what I've really been coming to appreciate, Travis, is even though he had a little bit of a rocky college career, he started at Alabama as an 18-year-old and gave us what Joe Burrow gave us as a redshirt junior at LSU. Plus he dumped all the rushing production on top. So you gotta think in context. So, you know, it would be inappropriate to look at Jalen Hurts as a late bloomer who did nothing until this final season in Oklahoma. Sure, absolutely. It was by far his most impressive season. He gave us almost 1,300 rushing yards, over 50 total touchdowns when you combine the passing and the rushing. But he was a producer as a true freshman and as a true sophomore. You know, he backslid that second year, obviously ends up transferring. He's competing in a direct competition with Tua Tagovailoa. And he loses out. Alabama chooses the other guy. But Tua's a consensus top five guy in the NFL draft. It's not really an indictment in your profile to get beat out by a razor's edge by a guy like that. You know, we're not holding that against Joe Burrow because he got beat out by Dwayne Haskins at Ohio State. And Dwayne Haskins was a great college quarterback. And Burrow just couldn't usurp him. And so Jalen Hurts, I mean, and Superflex, you guys, if you have early drafts, you got to be pulling the trigger early. Missing on Jalen Hurts in the second round because you're stubborn and you know you really wanted to wait until the third. If he hits, you will never forgive yourself. You'll never forgive yourself. You will forgive yourself for missing on AJ Dillon, even in the second round of a super flex draft. You can find that running back production elsewhere. You can buy that. It will be available to you every season that you ever play. But a Jalen Hurts hit at quarterback will never be available to you in trade. You will never go back and be able to get him if he hits. And that's the type of player we want to take in our rookie drafts.
Absolutely. And if you look at, we've been talking about the box score scout a lot, and really we've broken this down before. I mean, if he gets anywhere, you know, the draft capital going day two even, and there's some people that think he could sneak into the back end of day one. If he gets anywhere near that, let's say he goes middle of day two even, you're looking at a situation where his comps are looking closer to Russell Wilson than they are anything else. So he's definitely got plenty going for him in the profile department. So if you miss out on the rushing ability and the Konami code there that comes with Jalen Hurts, I think we're going to be just disappointed. So even in one quarterback leagues, I'm taking a chance on him later. But especially in Superflex, don't wait if you're worried about somebody kind of sneaking in and taking him from you in round two, for sure. I think a lot of people are going to be sad they missed out. Because once he starts, he's starting in fantasy lineups, no matter when that is or where that is, just because of the potential upside. But let's jump over back to wide receivers, because T. Higgins just had a pro day. And obviously, we take pro day numbers with a little bit of a grain of salt. He ran, I think it was the official numbers were around 4.56-ish. The early releases were like, oh, he ran a 4.43. No, it was probably mid-4.5, somewhere in there. That's basically what it's agreed upon. And if we add maybe 0.05 or 0.1, whatever you want to adjust for the pro day time, he looks like he's more like a 4.6 guy. And then his broad jump and vertical jump, his vert was kind of bad, his broad was kind of good. But what does that mean? Did we learn anything for you when we look at T. Higgins and his pro day? Or did he just pretty much profile like we thought he was going to anyway?
It's just hard for me to actually give him really any credit. I don't think that we ever expected him to be an uber athlete in the vein of Chase Claypool or anything like that, because he gave us the moments in film. He gave us the production that we would want and the breakout that we would want. So we were just looking for him to not flop athletically. Yeah. And I think he's proven that he's a decent athlete. One thing that we can do, because the combine information, obviously, there is no combine information on T. Higgins. We actually can adjust and enter a 40 as well as a customized draft pick for T. Higgins and still get a great output in group of sims from the RotoViz box score scout. So what do you actually want to use for his 40? Like what's the number you would adjust for?
I'd say like 4.6. I mean, that puts him in the range of like, around just a hair slower than, Michael Thomas, which is 4.57. and that's basically what it looks like he runs for. 4.56 at his pro day, so let's just say 4.6.
And what do we want for his draft pick? We going late first here?
Let's just say pick 40, in case he kind of leaks out of the first, just due to the depth of the class and the risers that have been kind of sneaking up the boards here recently.
So I mean, you guys are going to love this list. This is a comp list. Even with the 4.6 40 here, by the time we put in, the weight, that 216-pound weight, very huge for a receiver. We like these heavy guys. Even if he's a little taller, his BMI is not maybe where some of our short, thick guys that we like are, but still, he's heavy enough. And when you pair it with his production profile, T. Higgins has some great comps. So his number one comp, and it's absolutely drool-worthy, is Michael Thomas. You mentioned Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas is his number one comp. We get Cody Latimer, Laquon Treadwell, so two huge flops. But then we get Juju Smith-Schuster, Malcolm Kelly, Robert Woods, James Washington, Brandon LaFell, Jarvis Landry, A.J. Brown. I mean, that is a top 10 list that is hot. So nice. Let's do this as we wrap up Higgins. Given what we know about his profile now, his athleticism from his pro day, given that sim list, that comps list from the RotoViz Prospect Box Score Scout, Higgins or Denzel Mims for you?
I think it's still Higgins. I think I really do believe Higgins is going to edge Mims out on the draft capital. I think it's going to be really going to come down to the landing spot between those two, because they are probably pretty close to each other for me. But Higgins would probably be at the top of the tier that Denzel Mims has just kind of snuck into.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. We see plenty of receivers who run in that 4-6 range be successful at the next level. No one has ever confused T. Higgins for a burner. I think a miss on T. Higgins probably still looks something like good Mike Williams. It's bad that we even have to qualify that, but good Mike Williams. That would be the Mike Williams that is still, you know, a reasonably...
There's been like six of them, so yeah.
Yeah, there has been. So Mike Williams, who currently plays for the Los Angeles Chargers, is the Mike Williams I'm referring to.
There we go.
So T. Higgins, I think, definitely still belongs above Denzel Mims. They're probably closer than they were, you know, pre-combine information. Probably still the same tier, dare I even say. But I think Higgins certainly belongs near the top of that tier after our big three of CeeDee Lamb, Jalen Reagor, and Jerry Jeudy at the wide receiver position.
Certainly. And, you know, I think before we wrap up here, I just want to kind of sneak in a little something for Justin Jefferson, because I think he's going to be controversial once people realize that a lot of people are kind of putting him up in the top three and four wide receiver conversation. And I think that there's plenty of evidence to suggest that that totally makes sense. If he sees top 50 draft capital, he's somebody that not only profiles really well with a bunch of good sims. I mean, even like his top sim with the RotoViz box score scout, you know, giving him like top 50 capital. It looks like Robert Woods. And obviously he kind of started off slow at Buffalo, but he was excellent last year. Other guys that are comp to Justin Jefferson, we're looking at Chris Godwin, Brandon Cooks, several other names that are looking like good hits as far as potential guys to kind of project him to. And when I look at his adjusted production index, I mean, he's got like, he's 64th percentile, which sneaks in, which is good enough. And it's actually really close to Michael Crabtree. It's also really close to Michael Thomas. So there's some players that he profiles similarly to when we look at his dominator adjusted yards per team pass attempt and touchdowns per team pass attempt that I'm really excited about when I talk about Justin Jefferson. And since he answered a bunch of the athleticism questions, I'm no longer really concerned there. I mean, out of high school, his 40 was absolutely dreadful, but he answered his speed questions. He's going to profile as the perfect modern slot wide receiver. So if you don't have Justin Jefferson as a top three or four wide receiver and top five wide receiver, just from a projection and expectation of future NFL production standpoint, I don't know what to tell you. He's probably going to get the capital you want to see. He's got all the production index that you want to see, and he's probably athletic enough now to answer any questions we might have had. So Justin Jefferson, another guy who's probably going to be controversial for some, once more ranks come out near the draft and people are like, why is Justin Jefferson in top three now? There are plenty of reasons for that. And really, there's almost no questions when it comes to his profile. He's been the guy outside of Jamar Chase for LSU for 2 years now. So like his profile, like everything about Justin Jefferson, hope to see him land somewhere fun. But before we do wrap up, I just want to, I haven't done this in a bit. And so the Devy player of the week, this is a shout out to a couple people who've been bothering me about not talking about this player. The Devy player of the week is Journey Brown for Penn State. So for the spring testing, Journey Brown ran a 4.29, which is actually faster than Saquon Barkley's 40. I'm not sure he's going to run that when it gets to the combine, but Journey Brown did run that at Penn State in the spring testing. He's a little bit lighter, so it's a little bit less impressive, but he's about 5'11", 210 pounds-ish, and he really finished strong down the stretch last fall. I thought that it was going to be, really a Ricky Slade or perhaps Noah Cain being the guy that we were excited about coming out of this past season, but it turns out that it's actually Journey Brown. He finished super strong in the last five games he played. He had four 100-yard games. So if he doesn't get committed this coming fall by Penn State and Noah Cain doesn't emerge as a 1A in that committee situation and Brown really features for Penn State, he is going to be somebody who's going to climb up draft boards pretty quickly. He's already doing so in a lot of Devy leagues, and I'm getting a lot of questions on a player like him because he doesn't have the longest resume. But you want to grab these players before they go off in nerdy Devy leagues where you can roster your college players before they're on NFL teams. So keep an eye on Journey Brown and his stock because he's going to be flying up rankings all throughout this really spring and summer, throughout spring practices, and probably even in college fantasy football leagues is going to be a huge riser and huge asset there. But be looking forward to the next edition of the Dynasty Command Center and RotoViz Rookie Guide. We are just putting the finishing touches on that. That should be out here soon. Hope you guys enjoyed the first edition. We're going to have all we had in that first guide and more, including some looks at individual defensive players and some other fun, unique content there. So look for that here soon. You can find me on Twitter at FF_TravisM if you have any questions whatsoever on any of these players. And of course, you can find Curtis at CPatrickNFL. But until next time, keep living that dynasty life.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.